Hello, and welcome to the Femslash Podfic podcast. This week, we're reading Chapter 2 of Amy Carey's Not Here to Make Girlfriends. 3, in which Regina Mills brings her son to work. Stars, they're just like us! Zelina Green, the first winner of reality TV behemoth True Love's Kiss, was spotted taking her children to the park last weekend. Green was seen drinking coffee and laughing with a gal pal while her children played on the swings and ran around. Pictured below, Green comforted eldest child Darcy when she fell and scraped her knee. Though Green's win on the show was plagued with rumors of fixing by producer mother Cora Mills, the 6-year fairy tale romance resulting in 2 children has stood the test of time. Of course, Henry is sick on the day the new childminder heads off to meet with her thesis supervisor. She really must stop hiring students. And of course, Henry is sick on the day she absolutely must be on location. "I'll be fine at home, Mom," he whines, then coughs pathetically into a Kleenex. "There are laws, Henry," she says. "Besides, you used to like coming to set." He had spent 2 whole weeks with her on the set of True Love's Kiss when he was 7. It had worried her, then, how much he had enjoyed the world of reality TV, though she now suspects that much of the basis of its appeal was the generous snack table and the time spent hanging out with camera operators who didn't moderate their language around a 7-year-old. "I'm not a little kid anymore," he says. She decides saying, "You'll always be my kid," is not the best path to positive mother-son relationships, and instead asks, "Shall I give Auntie Zelina a call?" Henry shrugs. But Zelina cannot look after him. "I'm run off my feet today, sis," she says. "Darcy has a hair appointment, and Manson is teething." Manson is 4 years old. She and Zelina got on well when Regina was a child. The developing resentment is more recent and unwelcome. She has tried to talk with Zelina about it before, but has come away feeling frustrated. "You get everything," Zelina had said last time they'd had a dinner together, tongue loosened after too many glasses of Pinot Grigio, and Regina had wanted to scream at her. What had she got? A perpetually critical and manipulative mother? A dead fiancé? And a soulless job that she loathes? Yeah. She's a real winner. "Thanks anyway," Regina says, and she cannot help the sarcasm lacing her voice, phone clenched in her hand. "I'll let you get back to your improbably teething child." Henry grimaces when she hangs up. "I'm coming to set, aren't I?" he says, sighing. "I'll go pack a bag." It's not too bad, really. There are plenty of couches, so long as she sets him up in unused rooms. And while there's no TV, he has his tablet and several books, and, when she arrives, she puts one of the PAs on Henry duty. "If he sneezes, I want to know about it," she says, ignoring Henry roll his eyes. "Sweetheart, I'll check in with you as often as I can." She kisses his forehead, his skin warm to the touch, but not dangerously so, and pulls the blanket she found in one of the many closets up to his waist. He lets out a gust of breath and pulls his tablet from his backpack. "Yeah, great. Whatever." Today she's producing a group date, the suitor taking 4 of the girls horseback riding at the ranch, only a short drive from the mansion. Or so it will appear on screen. There will, in fact, be doubles for anything beyond a walk around a fenced-in field. It's not worth the risk of injury, as they discovered 3 seasons ago, when one of the girls broke her arm. Plaster casts and ball gowns are not a sexy combination, and you can't eliminate a girl who broke limbs in the line of duty. The chemistry is lacking today, and she's not sure if it's the girls themselves, one too provocative, the other 3 reserved, or the suitor. He's laying on the charm a little too thick. It's stilted, and doing nothing to bring the shy girls out of their shells. One of them, a little blonde named Ashley, is one of Catherine's top picks, and Cora has deemed her one of the acceptable alternatives to Emma, should Emma Swan prove disappointing. And her tone is laced with dire warnings for whoever makes Emma Swan prove disappointing. She watches as Catherine tries to speak with him about stepping it up, with no success. He talks over her the entire time. Regina can't hear exactly what he's saying, but he has already been demonstrating diva-like behavior so she can make an educated guess. And when she tries to get him quiet, he walks away. She can feel Catherine's frustration radiating off of her in waves, and she follows him back to the stables. "Hey, Mills," he says, and she winces internally at the informality, careful to keep her expression blank. "How's it going?" "It all feels false," she tells him. "Isn't that the show all over, though?" he asks. He's standing a shade too close, smirking, like he thinks he's God's gift to all women. "Get better at acting, then," she replies, because there's no sense in beating around the bush with someone she suspects is intensely literally minded. His lips purse. He's offended. "Good." When they pick up again, he flirts outrageously with all four women in turn, flashing his improbably white, straight teeth. But at least this time around, it feels natural. Catherine smiles over at her and mouths, "Thank you." "He's not my responsibility," she tells her when shooting is through. "Keep him in line. We want to minimize Cora's presence on set." Catherine nods fervently. Having Cora on location is a nightmare. Of course, her mother calls her as she's heading back to the mansion. "Progress?" she asks. Regina can hear the clack of typing in the background, because of course Mother couldn't possibly take 30 seconds out of her schedule solely to devote to Regina, even professionally. "The writing shoot went smoothly," she says. "We're on schedule to shoot the first single date tomorrow." Though the show will air over 3 months, in all actuality, they film over the course of a few weeks. "Good," she says. "Now I want Emma on that single date." "We have it set up for Tamara." "Emma," Cora says in a tone that brooks no argument. "And I want it to be emotionally resonant." Regina sighs. "You're the boss." Honestly, Cora is probably right that they get Emma to build that emotional connection early on. She had been hoping to give Tamara a fair chance. This is an even whiter season than usual of True Love's Kiss. "Yes," Cora says. "I am." She hangs up. When she arrives back at the mansion, she grabs soup from craft services and makes her way to the room where she's secreted Henry. However, when she arrives, he's not alone. Emma Swan is with him, sitting on a footstool by his head, and he's laughing, sounding happier than she's heard him in a long time, despite the rattling cough. Emma leaps up when she sees her. "Regina, hi," she says. "I was bored," Regina asks, setting the cartons of soup on the coffee table. "I went exploring," Emma admits, cocking her head to one side in a way that is bizarrely endearing. "And I found the kid." "So I can see." Ignoring Emma, she sits at Henry's feet and pulls the lid from the soup. "Sit up, sweetheart. It's chicken noodle." Henry grumbles, but shifts so that he's upright and takes the soup from her. "Thanks," he says, not meeting her eye. The levity that had filled the room prior to her arrival has disappeared. She fidgets with her hands in her lap, resisting the desire to coddle him. "Henry was getting pretty bored, too," Emma says, and Regina suspects she's only talking to fill the silence. "I thought I could scrounge up a pack of cards and teach him something. Cheat, perhaps." Regina catches Henry's eye, and he grins. He's an expert cheat player, with excellent instincts and a real talent for telling lies, which she hopes remains solely used for card games. I think that sounds like fun, she says blandly. I can always tell when people are lying, Emma says. It's like a superpower of mine. Henry hides a smirk at this, and once again shares a look with Regina. It's everything to her right in this moment, because no matter how angry her little boy gets at her, there is still their bond, their 10 years of shared history and love. I'm really excited to learn how to play, he says. And this time, Regina can't help but laugh. What's funny? Emma demands. Regina hands her the carton of soup she'd been planning to eat herself. She can grab a meal on the way back to editing. You have this, she says. Their hands brush at the transfer, Emma's fingers cold, sending a shiver through Regina's body. I'm just glad Henry's being suitably entertained. Emma smiles. He's a great kid, she says. He's sitting right here, Henry grumbles and slurps at his soup. Perhaps you could show Miss Swan the story you're writing, she suggests. Maybe, Henry says, hesitant. Perhaps after lunch, if you still want to hang out. He looks across at Emma. I'd be honored, Emma says, and Regina might be imagining things, but she thinks Emma's eyes are suspiciously bright. She walks Regina out. Need to discuss boring show stuff, she says to Henry, who's on his tablet again, and honestly doesn't seem to care. I'll be back, and then we'll play cards. Once in the hall, however, she says, thanks for not freaking out about this. Why would I freak out? Regina asks. We did extensive background checks on you all. Emma laughs. She's another one who stands too close. Close enough that Regina can see the faint freckles on her skin, usually hidden by foundation, and the absurdly long eyelashes for such a fair person. She finds she doesn't mind Emma's proximity quite so much. Still, she says, thanks. Be ready for tomorrow, Miss Swan, she says, throat raspy. I hear there's going to be a single date. That night, Henry still has his light on when she goes up to say goodnight. I'm sorry about today, she says. It's okay, he mumbles, eyes drifting shut in spite of himself. Emma's pretty cool. Regina smiles. She's not bad, is she? She says. Good night. She stands in his doorway a moment, watching as he drifts off to sleep. Not a bad day, all in all. 4. In which Emma's tragic past is revealed and milked for ratings. Former True Love's Kiss winner reveals tragic past in tell-all exclusive. Looking at Ariel de la Mer, one would never think the petite redhead, constantly smiling, would have had to face her own personal demons coming into True Love's Kiss. Ariel, who won Eric's heart in season 2, is upfront about her selective mutism, which almost led her to leaving the show. I was diagnosed as a child, she tells us. With therapy, I was able to recover from it, but it still flares up when I'm under pressure. And on True Love's Kiss, she sighs and looks out the window of the large seaside property she shares with Eric, gaze intent. My anxiety level spiked, and the stress almost became too much. So what helped the Titian beauty work through her condition and come out on top? She smiles. Eric, she says. He was so patient with me, and there was such a connection between us. I was able to put everything else aside and focus on him. It's at this point that her dreamboat beau, Eric, enters. Emma smiles when Regina arrives on set that morning and bounds over to her. Hi, she says. How's the kid? Henry's well, Regina says, after a brief moment of confusion. Honestly, she's not used to this positive attention from the girls. She's either invisible or loathed, no in between. Emma seems to actually like her, and she can't help but feel like that's dangerous. Good, she says, placing a hand on Regina's arm. Her touch is electric, fizzing and popping through Regina's veins. And, oh God, this is the worst. You're needed in this scene, Miss Swan, Regina says, clearing her throat, which has become unaccountably dry. The invitation card, gilded with silver, is given to the unfortunately named Rory Rose. Regina had tried to convince her to stick with Aurora for the purposes of the show, but she refused. It's a single date, she says, opening the envelope. They do several takes of this, until the excited response is sufficiently over the top. Rory clears her throat and reads, If you go down to the woods today, you're sure for a big surprise. That's mildly creepy, Tamara says, and Emma snorts. Regina frowns. They'll edit out Emma's less than appropriate response later. And the person going on the date is... Rory looks over at Regina, who gestures to hold, and hold, and Emma! Emma's first response is to look over at Regina. She's beaming, face alight with happiness, and Regina can see why Cora wants her to win so badly. So, she asks, when they set Emma up in front of the green screen, are you excited to get the first of the single dates? Really excited, she says. And this time Regina doesn't have to ask her to be more assertive. She's surprised to feel jealousy knot itself in her stomach at this. And shocked. I thought Tamara, or maybe Rory, would get it. Obviously this is a chance to get to know the suitor better, Regina says, swallowing her jealousy and reminding herself that this is the same as any other interview. What do you hope to find out about him? I guess I'd like to get to know him better. We've barely spoken to him beyond, like, how are you? Isn't that weird? Emma smiles that quick half-smile with which Regina is becoming so familiar when she's in front of the camera. I'd like to know about his family, his work, what makes him tick, anything, everything, whatever he's willing to tell me, really. Do you think there will be any resentment from the other girls? I suppose so, she appears dubious. We all know it's a competition, she says. I would try really hard not to resent others for their success here, but I guess I'm pretty competitive. I like to win. The camera cuts to a mid-shot of Emma Swan, sitting in front of a screen covered in rose petals. I'd like to get to know him better, Emma says, and she's smiling. Beneath her voice, soft, classical music can be heard. His family, his work, what makes him tick, everything. The shot fades into one of Emma laughing with the suitor at a cocktail party, carefully framed to ensure that they are the only two on screen. In voiceover, we hear, We all know it's a competition. I like to win. The incredibly obvious clue notwithstanding, Emma feigns impressive surprise when she arrives at the clearing in the woods to find a picnic lunch laid out and the suitor waiting for her. The setting is perfectly romantic. Of course it is. Regina set it up. She even had one of the PAs plant light pink roses around the clearing. They'll get nasty tweets about this when it airs. Roses grow on bushes. Who are they trying to kid with this bullshit? Talks five. But Emma appears genuinely charmed by the scene. How pretty, she says. She's dressed in a shirt the same pink as the flowers. Regina's pick, though she's regretting the costume choice now, because while it suits the setting, it doesn't suit her. Emma Swan is not soft pinks. She's not pastels. She's brilliant reds and vivid yellows, deep blues, and vibrant greens. The suitor hands her a bouquet. Not nearly as pretty as you, he says, and tucks one rose behind her ear, which, well, it's smooth, Regina has to admit. His hand brushes her cheek, thumb caressing the skin, and Emma's cheeks flush pink. She hopes that shows up on camera, because it's a moment they'll cut back to if, when, she reminds herself, because unless she fucks up completely, Emma has this in the bag. Emma wins. That first, perfect moment of contact. Cora will love it. They sit together on the picnic rug, Emma crossing her legs like a child on the mat at school, and someone hurries over with a bottle of champagne. "To you," the suitor says, clinking his glass against Emma's. "To us," she replies, and then she looks over, meeting Regina's eye, questioning. If she's reading it right, Emma's desperate for anyone's approval. Years spent without permanent family will do that to a person. Just as years of living with a family whose approval is finite and comes with 1,000 provisios has had a similar effect on Regina. "You keep looking over at me," Regina says, after she calls for time, crouching down beside Emma and ignoring the suitor, who appears irritated that Regina is interrupting them. "Pretend we're not here." Emma's gaze has drifted lower, to the strain of the top buttons of her shirt. Regina snaps a finger in front of her face, and she jerks her head up abruptly. "Okay, just me and him, right?" "Precisely," Regina says. "You're doing extremely well, dear." It's disconcerting how Emma's face brightens at her words. The date starts off light. Questions of favorite colors and interests. They both enjoy jogging, apparently, which will make for fascinating television. And Regina has to actively neutralize her expression, because Emma still has an irritating tendency to look over at her. Emma's actually been eating the picnic food and drinking the wine, which is not something Regina's ever seen on a single date before. The couple normally too busy soaking up every brief moment together to worry about food. So when Emma takes a bathroom break, she approaches the suitor. "Amp up your questions," she says. "Ask about her past relationships." "Anything in particular you want out of this?" the suitor asks, running his fingers through artfully tousled hair. "The viewers need to know why Emma is tentative around you," she says. "Betrayal, heartbreak, all that juicy stuff." He nods, smirking. "You horning in on my date?" Emma asks, standing behind Regina. "Not my type," Regina says. "And I honestly wonder if he's yours." She'll give it to the suitor, though. He might be vain, cocky, and a little too well-coiffed, but he's good at this. He and Emma sit in silence, side by side, and he watches Emma as she picks up the remains of the picnic. "I feel like you've got your walls up around me," he says. Emma pulls apart a slice of bread, squashing the soft dough between her thumb and forefinger. "It's just," she says, "I don't find it easy to let people in." He edges closer, places a comforting arm on her shoulder. "Would you like to talk to me about it?" Emma, blast her, looks over at Regina, her face a mask of indecision. She's drumming the fingers of her right hand against her denim-clad thigh. Regina nods, smiles, gestures for Emma to speak, and hates herself for doing this. "She knew what she signed up for," she thinks. "We have all this information on file," she thinks. "She's not a child," she thinks. The guilt doesn't cease. "I had this boyfriend," Emma says. She's not looking at anyone now, not even Regina. Instead, talking to her knees. "When I was 17, I'd run away from my last foster home. And I met him because we tried to steal the same car. It's a long story." She looks over at the suitor briefly. I'd love to hear it sometime, the suitor says. It's not very interesting, she says, dismissive. Anyway, I fell in with him, and we were so in love. We did some stuff I'm not proud of, and then she pauses. He wanted to settle down somewhere. Tallahassee. He had these watches he'd stolen. I was just going to pick them up for him so he could fence them. The late afternoon air is cool, a breeze shooting through the clearing. Emma pushes her hair back behind her ears, heedless of the flower that drifts to the rug. I got caught. He ran. And then, in juvie, I found out I was pregnant. She pulls her knees up to her chest, hugging them close. You have a child? The suitor asks. I gave birth, she corrects. The kid's not mine. He'd be 10 now. I don't know. She sighs, shoulders shaking, and not just from the cold. She's struggling to keep it together. Regina presses her lips into a firm line. Close-up of Regina's face, she instructs. They need to see the tears threatening to blossom from her eyes. Thank you, the suitor says. I know it must be hard telling me this, but I have really enjoyed getting to know some of the Emma behind those high walls. He reaches into the pocket of his khaki slacks. I realize it's early, but I want to know more of you. Will you stay on this journey with me for another week? He holds out a charm. I'd love to, Emma says. And if she's still pale, and when, and her response less than enthused, well, they can edit the segment so no one notices. She lets the suitor clip the charm in place on the bracelet and accepts his hug, her own arms encircling his body, even as she stiffens against the touch of his lips pressed to her cheek. Back at the mansion, Emma holds it together long enough to be fawned over. Was it totally romantic? Ashley asks, sighing. Tamara's questioning has a slightly more cynical bent. Did you kiss? Emma frowns. Of course not, she says. Regina makes a mental note to interview Tamara when they're finished filming Emma and the envious reactions of her fellow competitors. When filming is over, she battles with herself. She really should be getting home. If she leaves set now, she'll be able to have a late dinner with Henry, help him with his schoolwork. Yet, despite this, she finds herself outside Emma's closed bedroom door. She knocks. No answer. Miss Swan? She hears a nose being blown, and then the door opens. Emma's eyes are red-rimmed, and her face pale and strained with sticky tears, clumping her mascara and running rivulets through the thick foundation necessary for the camera. Is there something you need? May I come in? Regina asks. Emma stands aside. Sorry about the mess. Outfits are thrown everywhere, crumpled across the single bed, and there are several Kleenex balled up on the bedside table. Regina shifts a pile of clothing and sits down, rummaging through her handbag. Sit, she says, patting the space in front of her. Emma sits, and Regina pulls out makeup wipes. She tucks her hand under Emma's chin, pulls her close. Do you want to talk? I've talked enough today, I think, Emma says, laughing, though she sounds anything but amused. Emma presses the wipe firmly against her skin, Emma shuddering at the sudden cold, and removes a sweep of foundation. There's talking, she says, and then there's talking without cameras. Can I trust you? Emma asks. Her lips twist into a grimace. Close your eyes, Regina says in response, and wipes away Emma's eye makeup. She can see the delicate blue veins on her eyelids, her skin so translucent and fragile. Emma's chin is up, her neck a graceful arc. I don't know. I don't know, she says eventually, honest. He'll be 11 soon, Emma says in response. I don't regret it, you know, but I'd like to know he's okay. Regina thinks of her own son, nearing 11 at an alarming speed. Henry's adopted, she says. There, you're makeup-free now. She pulls her hand away, busies herself with returning the wipes to her handbag. She feels Emma's hand against hers, just for a moment. He's lucky, she says, and her thumb strokes against the back of Regina's hand. He didn't take it well, she finds herself saying. I think, she stops. She'd been about to tell Emma that she worries constantly about her work taking over her time with Henry, about not being enough for him, about him resenting her, growing to loathe her, like so many others in her life. No, Emma says, hand squeezing hers. He's so lucky. Her gaze is intent and earnest, eyes still rimmed red, and the barest flecks of difficult-to-remove mascara and eyeliner caked to the edges of her eyes. Get some sleep, Miss Swan, Regina says, standing and drawing her hand away. You're no good to me if you're exhausted and crotchety. As she drives home, she wonders whether there'll ever come a day when she believes her. That was chapter 2 of Not Here to Make Girlfriends by Amy Carey. As always, this is the Fem/Podfic podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week with chapter 3.